May all beings be happy. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be free from harm. May all beings love life. May all beings awaken. Welcome to another Kyuk Audio Podcast, a Tassajara story. I'm DC Puba of Kyuk Audio and Kyuk Archives, preserving the legacy of Shunryu Suzuki and those whose paths crossed his, and anything else that comes to mind. I pray that you and yours are safe and comfortable, free from economic hardship, and able to get out and do whatever it is you want within the limitations of the universal precept of do as little harm as possible. So after our pause to meditate, we'll get right into the first and only piece I'm going to read this evening. So when you hear the bell, if you're of the mind, hit pause and meditate or not for as long as you wish. And when you're through and ready to come back, just hit on pause and we'll be here to hit the bell to end the meditation and get started. Light. Ron Leva had sat Sesshin with Yastani, Soen, and Maizumi for a few years before he came up from Southern California in the summer of 70 and washed guest dishes. Returned the following spring for a practice period. He was a swarthy, solid, quiet young guy. He stopped me on the path between the dorm and the kitchen. Ron said something had happened he had to tell someone and decided on me. Okay. Now, I'm a matter-of-fact type guy, wouldn't you say? Yeah, he was on the no-nonsense end of the spectrum. Well, something happened last night that I wouldn't blame you for not believing. Try me. Well, he was Jikido, the person who cleans and takes care of the Zendo and sleeps there the night before. The Jikido gets up early, lights the Zendo lamps, and puts out the lanterns that light the paths so people can see on their way to morning Zazen. One of the Jikido's duties is to clean and refill the lanterns in the afternoon so they're ready for the next morning. It takes 30 minutes or so to get them all lit and placed so the Jikido would get up before 4. Every once in a while, a Jikido would oversleep, and that's what Ron thought had happened when he was awakened by light shining through the Zendo windows. Thinking someone else was putting the lanterns out, he jumped out of his sleeping bag, slipped on his pants, rushed out the doorway, turned toward the path, and stopped cold in his feet. The light was not coming from lanterns. It came from across the path by the Han and Densho, not 20 feet away. What he saw was a brightness with oval form hovering a few feet above the ground, about the size of a human body, but there was no body, just light, light that illuminated the surrounding area. In the immediate vicinity, he could see details in the bricks, stones, wood, leaves. He could see his hands and feet. He knew he wasn't dreaming. He stood and looked. Was not afraid. It was not normal, earthly light. He sensed being, a benign presence, a bright, silent presence that after a short while began to dim. Details faded, dim and dim, until Ron was standing in total darkness. "What did you do then?" I asked after a moment. I needed to take it in. "Well, I went and looked at the alarm clock, and it was still too early to do anything, so I went back to sleep." I didn't experience the light Rod did, but I knew that total darkness. If there's a good-sized moon up, one can see without the lantern, even a little after it sets from reflection. But if there's no moonlight and the lights are out, you can't see your hand in front of your face. There's no city or even neighbor lights for miles. So there is very little light pollution at Tal Sahara. I was so used to walking around after fire watch that I would walk in total darkness. It was such a rare experience. I'd go slowly because I'd naturally veer some and bump into a tree or stone and then correct course over the bridge to the baths in the hot water, in the dark, dark, alone. The windowless steam room was always dark, but alone in there on a dark night was a challenge. Imagination would conjure up the scary. Stories I'd heard would come back to me. The hot spring area is where the Indians had come for thousands of years. Occasionally a guest would report seeing one or seeing something they couldn't explain. In the old days, mules were used to do the heavy hauling in the mines over on Willow Creek. There were miners that followed the custom of attaching bells to the mules' tails. Bob Beck said that sometimes they would hear the bells coming down the Tony Trail, but the mules would never arrive. Marie Williams from Monterey had been coming for years to go to the steam rooms to commune with the Indians. The surface of the interior walls was crumbling, so Bob painted both steam rooms with an expensive epoxy. Next time Williams was there, she went to the office, furiously complaining that they'd killed the Indians. The paint peeled off. The next time she returned, she said the Indians were back. Bob had an experience on the trail coming down from the horse pasture on the path to the Narrows. He saw two people in black robes cutting a tree down in the distance. This was before any contact with the Zen Center. When he arrived below, there was a tree down, but no one there. At Tal Sahara, they said they hadn't seen anyone. Unlikely two people in robes would have gone down creek. It just doesn't make sense. An experience that made even less sense to him happened on a cold winter night when he and Anna were snowed in with their caretaker, Ralph Burdett. It rarely snows at Tal Sahara, but there was snow on the ground that night. The three of them sat around the fireplace where the Zendo altar would later be. There were partitions around them to help keep the heat in, and they were bundled up reading near the fire. A knock on the door. They didn't respond because there couldn't be anyone who'd come in over the road. The snow would be too deep. Another knock. Bob went to the door. There was a man wearing a mackinaw with one leg and a reddish-white beard. He said that he was teaching his girlfriend to drive and wanted to know the way out. Bob said there's only one way out, and that's the way he came in. There was a car with its lights on up above the stone steps. The man said, "Thanks a lot." Back inside, Bob had a strange feeling. he, Anna, and Ralph went out. Couldn't hear any car sounds, nor were there any tracks of a car having been there. The next morning at breakfast, he asked if anyone had come the night before. Ralph and Anna slowly agreed, yes, someone had come, but they couldn't remember anything beyond that for a while. Then Bob remembered the man at the door. He told that story to Richard Baker and some students years later, and Baker said he'd met that same man, or whatever it was. Joanna Bull was a Tassajara student who said she hadn't seen a ghost at Tassajara, but she got into Zen because of one. Said she'd seen what appeared to be a ghost, and it so mystified her that she went to a bookstore to read up on that, but instead left with Alan Watts's The Spirit of Zen. I've talked to several students who told of strange events in the Zendo at night when they were Jikido. Footsteps heard walking from the closed doorway down an aisle, the aisle furthest from the creek that's used by a priest approaching the altar. One told of seeing indentations on the floor, sinking down as if a foot were stepping there. One reported howling following the footsteps. One reported seeing an apparition of Suzuki in his robes approaching the altar and sitting there. One woman was so terrified she refused to be Jikido again. I've noticed that people such as she with Indian blood have a much higher degree of such stories. Philip Wilson did, and he saw spirits at Tassajara and Aeji and had other experiences beyond the norm. Ed Brown heard footsteps when he was Jikido in the Zendo one night, heard them approaching and move on, and he still wonders if it was a dream. Brent Pylon reports, I was sleeping in the Zendo after the day of the Jikido. You may recall how that old floor of Zendo kind of creaked, probably from heat and cold expansion. During the night, I heard these footsteps walking past me towards the altar. You may call this a dream if you want. I got up and turned around, and it was clearly Suzuki Roshi. And there was this very pale blue light, as if the burner of a gas stove were turned down to the very tiniest. Well, there was this blue light throughout the Zendo, and he was approaching the altar, got up on the altar, bowed and ascended to the Tan. And as he turned, it was as if his robes were some kind of rheostat valve. As he turned, the robes turned around and turned the color code up from dim blue to the brightest orange, and he was enveloped in a penumbra of flames around him. I was really startled and a little afraid, but hello, it was Suzuki Roshi. Here's a chance. So I walked up to the front and bowed, and he looked down and very matter-of-factly said, it is not necessary to bow in this situation. And then he said a bunch of other stuff about my life and practice, and I was sitting there the next day at lunch thinking, oh, that was important. But I couldn't remember it. Two people said they saw a monk without a face. Years later, I asked them what that was about, and neither remembered having said that. I've noticed that people tend to forget unusual experiences. When we were in elementary school, my friend Mary would tell me how she flew around the house at night when everyone was sleeping. I asked her about that 40 years later, and she said she didn't know what I was talking about. Nils didn't forget. He said he used to astral travel when he was young and at home. He said he could make it happen by how he turned in bed and set his mind not to care. Couldn't do it if he wanted to. Said he'd fly out to the streets and over the cars and houses and back. Personally, I have flown high above San Francisco, looking down on the lights of the city and bridges. I love those dreams, which in my case, I think are just dreams. But they are very real. And what do I know? Mel and Yvonne reported seeing a UFO appear to fly into a mountain on their approach to Tassajara on the road. Mel later talked of a blue light flying low. We've had other guests that had UFO reports on the road, one of them from a couple who said it was quite close and couldn't be explained away. A student told Baker privately that a tiny UFO was coming into his room at night. He had a friend stay with him, and the friend saw it too. I've read lots about UFOs and have never heard anything else about a tiny UFO. I was sitting on the hill in front of the stone rooms on a dark night, and a super bright light flashed in the sky like a powerful explosion, far off, no sound. I suppose it was a meteorite. It was so amazing that tears flowed down my cheeks. Several times I was fortunate to see the flame and shine of a rocket from Vandenberg Air Force Base, 175 miles south. Sitting up on the hillside, all one could see was the light moving up in the night sky. Behind the initial bright exhaust was a V-trail of glow that expanded as the rocket rose until a vast amount of the dark sky was a bright triangle with a fading base. The rocket seemed to rise slowly. It was so far off, and the brightness lingered for a surprisingly long time, as if light were a substance that hovered and finally went out. All four Becks saw a blue orb on the Tassajara Road coming down toward Jamesburg. Bob, Anna, and their kids, Adam and Katie. Bob stopped the car. The blue orb was large and low and floating off to the side above the valley. Adam remembers it as purple, Bob and Anna as blue. Bob called it a flying object he definitely could not explain. One early morning, two people in the town trip truck driving out at 4 a.m. came upon an unusual sight at the last sharp turn before the road levels out on a ridge. Two tall figures dressed in what looked like white uniforms walked quickly away from the lights of the car, departing the road and on a path into the chaparral. They each had rectangular white backpacks on. Our friends were spooked, said there was nothing normal about what they saw. Ed Brown had an experience like that there in a car with other people. He remembers it as two people in white robes and says, I had the sense that I don't think there really was anybody there. The Shushogi is a compilation of teachings from Dogen, often chanted by monks in Japan. Suzuki was reading from it in a lecture and came to the line, Do not take refuge in the spirits of mountains or ghosts of the dead, and worship not the heretical shrines. Suzuki's take on that was, according to heretical understanding, we take refuge in something which is different from ourselves. According to our understanding, everything is within our mind. Our mind includes everything, and in our mind, many things will take place. This has been a Kuk Audio podcast, a Tassajara story. I'm D.C., Poobah of Kuk Audio and Kuk Archives, coming to you from sleepy Sonora with dogette Bandita, feline Cuchita, and dear lovely Katrinka. And we're wishing you and yours and all of us a grand awakening.